This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Craig Unger. The new book is Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. October surprise. So far, we've heard from all the players in the Republican Party, all the players in the Carter White House, the go-betweens for Bill Casey, his network reaching back to the OSS. We've heard from major publications, Newsweek and Esquire. We have information gathered together for AP and for publication, investigations by the Joint Committee 91-92 investigating the October surprise story, Gary Sick's book about it, Gary Sick's op-ed page. We talked all that. What about Iran? It is now the fall of 2014. Craig arrives in Iran. He's got a visa for a week. What was your mission, Craig? What were you looking for?
Well, I figured if the October surprise took place, if there was a deal between the Republicans and Iran, there had to be people in Iran who knew about it. And one of the key people I wanted to interview was a guy named Mohsen Rafik Dost. And he had been an ally of Ayatollah Khomeini from the very start. He had been in Paris when Khomeini was in exile there. And he accompanied Khomeini on the flight back to Tehran, at which point Khomeini was greeted by millions of people in the streets celebrating his return. And Rafik Dost was actually chauffeuring the car as they drove Khomeini through the streets. He later became head of arms. He soon became head of arms procurement for Khomeini, for Khomeini's new revolutionary government. And he was a crucial man. He became enormously wealthy under the Islamic regime. And I wanted to interview him because he had to be knowledgeable about the October surprise.
But waiting for this interview all week, Craig had time to be a tourist in Tehran. And one of the places he visited is the Den of Spies. What's that, Craig?
The Den of Spies is the American Embassy, and that's why I titled the book Den of Spies. And it's really become a spy museum. As you enter it, there's I hesitate to call it a welcome mat. I believe it says Death to America. And when you go in there, they have old-fashioned typewriters, which were presumably in the old American Embassy. They have shredding machines that are very dated from that era. Immediately taking over the embassy, huge numbers of documents had been shredded, and the militants laboriously pasted them back together. And you see all those documents and various exhibits about American espionage and how it undermined Iran.
Emphasis. I know from over the years studying the story that the betrayal of Mossadegh in 1953 is something that all school children in Iran know about. All the revolutionaries who took over the embassy know about it. They talk about it all the time. And that betrayal of the original efforts by Iran to become a republic burns in the, even in the Iranians that are in the diaspora. I mention all this because my family is, part of my family is Persian, Iranian, Assyrian. And in 1952, I believe, maybe three, I didn't have the date fixed, during the Truman administration, so it would have been 51, 52, Mossadegh traveled to America and was feted in Washington and introduced around, especially to the president, because Mossadegh was seen as an ally of the United States. And I was 3 or 4 years old, and I was given a bouquet of roses to present to Mossadegh at the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. And I have photographs of this. Mossadegh was the great hope of the Iranian people. I was so scared of the roses, I dropped them. They all helped me. But in any event, I tell this because Den of Spies is not inaccurate. The Roosevelt family was involved along with the British intelligence in overthrowing Mossadegh, and he spent the rest of his life under house arrest. It's a tragedy that's never been corrected. Craig, did they talk about Mossadegh when you were there?
Well, yes. In fact, President Bonnie Sadr was very much an acolyte of Mossadegh. And I mean, it's really a very simple story. Mossadegh's big sin in the eyes of the United States, in the eyes of the West, was that he wanted to nationalize the oil industry. And at the time, we still have the BP as an oil outfit. It used to be British Petroleum. Before then, I believe it was the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. But at the time, the deal was the West got 87% of the profits from Iran's oil industry. And Iran wanted to cut a better deal. The Saudis had a much better deal with Aramco. And when that happened, when Mossadegh wanted to nationalize the oil industry, that was the last straw. And the coup went into operation. And as you say, it was led by the Roosevelt family, Kermit Roosevelt and his brother, his cousin Archibald Roosevelt, were among the big plotters who put the coup d'etat that overthrew Mossadegh, and they put that coup into place.
Craig is in Iran during the time of the presidency of Rouhani, who recently died in a helicopter crash. At that point, Obama administration, there was a warmth and a softening of the relationship between Washington and Tehran that was not absolute war. This is reaching back one presidency, two presidencies, because what we're looking at here is why it's possible for Craig to finally meet with people who are not in total denial of the October surprise. One of them is Davood Bavan, a spokesman for Iran, who dresses very well at the time. Craig makes a point of saying he's dressed in a tie, which is verboten most of the time in Iran because it's too much like our oppressors. But at the time, he felt free to do it. And then finally, this final day, your minder, your translator, takes you to meet Mohsen Rafiq Dost. And your presentation to him is important. And also your iPhone is important. Tell the story, Craig.
Right. Well, I had wanted to meet with Rafiq Dost forever. I mean, I thought about it years in advance, and I kind of had to do it on the sly. And when you travel, obviously, I don't speak Farsi. So, and even if I did, any American at that time had to be accompanied by a fixer who would serve as a translator and take you around to whatever appointments you wanted to see. And from the beginning, I told my fixer that I wanted to meet with Rafiq Dost. And it took a while. He kept trying and getting through the bureaucracy and the traffic and all that in Iran is very, very difficult. But finally, on the day before I was scheduled to leave, the day before my visa was set to expire, he called me up at 8 in the morning, said, get dressed and I'll pick you up in 5 minutes. And he took me to the office of Rafiq Dost, and I had half an hour with him. And doing interviews with someone through a translator is very difficult, especially in this case, because I believe Rafiq Dost did speak English well enough to understand the questions I was asking, and I obviously did not speak any Farsi whatsoever. So he had a big advantage over me. It's very hard to sort of catch someone in a lie when you're doing that kind of interview. But I did get to ask all the questions. And at one point, Rafiq Dost said, this is according to my translator, but he said, oh, yes, when we met with the Republicans. And then he stepped back and corrected himself and said, if we met with the Republicans. And it wasn't clear to me if he had sort of unwittingly conceded that the October surprise had taken place. In the end, he kind of denied it. But while I was there, this was 2014, and I think this was the first generation of iPhones where you could easily videotape a meeting. And my phone happened to be set up where I framed him quite well, and I merely pushed the button and I videotaped it. So I do have a videotape of that recording.
When we met with the Republicans. All right. So the suggestion here, this is just like a spy thriller that you've made up, Craig, except you've lived it. The suggestion here is that a lot of people in Iran still know about this. There are secrets.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And when I met with Bavand, he seemed to be quite comfortable with the idea that it happened. But he said he did not have firsthand knowledge. He seemed not to be too scared of talking to me. But in general, everyone knew that this was taboo. This is something you don't want to talk about. And it's partly because it meant that Iran was had secret relationship with Israel, and that was completely taboo. It was verboten. No one would dare admit that had taken place.
There's a photograph in Craig's book, February 1980, with the Ayatollah and Bani Sadr in Iran together. There's a photograph in Craig's book of Craig with Bani Sadr in Versailles in 2016. What did you learn from him, Craig, about this? Is he shy also of acknowledging, or does he go right in and explain what happened?
And Bani Sadr went right into it, and he delivered a lot of documents to the House of Representatives when they were investigating the October surprise. Unfortunately, they did not do due diligence, and they sort of abandoned. So those were some of the documents they left in the ladies' room under the tampon dispenser, and Bob Perry discovered them much later. Bani Sadr gave me the same set of documents, and he was quite open about it. In fact, he explained what had happened, that this was an action. The October surprise was not just an action directed against Jimmy Carter that was a coup d'etat, like a coup d'etat in part, but it was a double coup d'etat because in Iran the same thing was going on, and he was ousted as president of Iran and was impeached later. He survived three assassination attempts, and he eventually fled Iran and was living in exile in France when I met him.
The book is Den of Spies. The author, Craig Unger, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. When we come back, it's January 20th, 1981, Inauguration Day in Washington. Ronald Reagan is to be sworn in as the President of the United States. And this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.